Because.
Good afternoon. We're going to open up the Joint Committee on Ways and Means Subcommittee on General Government. Good afternoon. It's good having you here. Today is April 15th, 2015, and we're opening up a public hearing on Senate Bill 5502 related to the Department of Administrative Services. And colleagues, today we're going to have three items to discuss: Enterprise Technology Enterprise Update, DAS Rates and Assessments, and the Capital Program. Paul, is there anything we need to think about as we get started here?
Just would let the committee know that we're also scheduled for Monday, so what we don't complete today will be on Monday's agenda.
Perfect. Madam Co-Chair, we got this started. I'm going to toss the gavel back to you.
Wednesday?
Today you're chairing, and we'll go from there.
Thank you. Okay. Good afternoon, everybody. I'm opening a public hearing on Senate Bill 5502, Department of Administrative Services, Phase 2 hearing. Mr. Siebert, anything else you want to add?
Nothing else to add.
All right. Mr. Knott and Mr. Pettit, the stand is yours.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm George Knott, and I'm the Chief Financial Officer of the State of Oregon. And currently, I'm the Acting Chief Operating Officer and Acting DAS Director. Mr. Siebert has asked us to come, the co-chairs have asked us to come today to highlight a number of issues for you. The first one, we want to spend a little bit of time, and won't take too long, updating you on the status of where we are with the state data center, technology services programs, and then we're going to spend a fairly detailed amount of time working through with you on the DAS assessments. And so I have been the Chief Financial Officer for 9 years for the state, and so this is a new role for me in the acting role, but we've got a lot of really good things that are happening. And as we switch to this first slide, go ahead and click it over for us. There's a lot of really good stuff that's been going on. There's a lot of really good things that have been happening at the data center as we've been consolidating a lot of different programs. Over the last 3 months or so, though, we found that there are a number of things that we have opportunities to improve on. We've had some leaks of information. We have some other things that we've been taking care of and some vulnerabilities that have come up that we're actually trying to aggressively pursue and figure out how we can make the things stable there and also provide the environment that the staff that are out there can get their job done in an efficient way. In the short term, Mr. Pettit here, who is the Chief Information Officer for the state, the governor has appointed him to not only be the Chief Information Officer for the state, but also take day-to-day control of enterprise technology services for the near term. And Alex is really in charge of making sure that our technology needs and our security needs are taken care of. So his team, as we have found, network vulnerabilities or whatever, we've actually had the security team inside the CIO's office actually out there looking into it and making sure we can strengthen all those vulnerabilities up. So for the near term, we've actually merged the CIO's office, the Chief Information Officer, and the Enterprise Technology Services. And we have ongoing efforts. The governor, you may have seen, has announced that she's asked for an external review of the management oversight out there at ETS as well. And that process is getting underway. We have not got bids yet from any of the companies. We have 17 companies on pre-approved list that can do this kind of work, and we're working with the governor's office to get that assessment going forward. It will probably take somewhere between a month and 3 months by the time they get on board to get recommendations back to us. It just takes some time to do that. The final thing I'll mention here is that there's a lot of...
Sorry. Madam Chair.
Sorry, I'm Representative Comp.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just wondering, I'm going to make a big assumption here that there's additional cost to having this oversight, this outside oversight done, and do you have the funds to make sure that that's done and done well?
Madam Chair, Representative Comp, yes, there will be additional costs, and we will absorb that within the Department of Administrative Services budget for this biennium. That's what we're expecting to do.
Thank you.
So, but that will be part of the relationship as we actually set that assessment. Price is obviously one of the things we'll be taking a look at. But it's important for us right now to get it right, and we will make that work. So the final thing on here is that we've been working with Mr. Siebert pretty closely, trying to keep them informed about the approach that we've taken. There's a number of issues with the enterprise technology services that we're trying to wade through. As we get into the assessment side of this, you're going to see that there are a lot of budget issues related to the data center. This is the computing hub for state government, and there's a lot of issues related to customer demand and also upgrading aging infrastructure that we're going to take care of. But you will see those impacts as we get into the assessment side. So let me pause there and see if Mr. Pettit has any comments or if you have any questions specifically that we can answer around the assessment that we're doing at the data center.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Pettit.
I'm Alex Pettit. I'm the Chief Information Officer for the state. I'm here if you have any general questions about anything that George had gone through or anything I could answer for you.
I would just say that I appreciate the work you all are doing with Mr. Siebert to fine-tune the budget fairly substantially. I think we'll leave details of that until we get to phase three for you all because we don't really have a firm number. But suffice it to say that my sense is that your budget request is going to drop substantially, which will drop the assessments to some extent on most, if not all, agencies. So that will be helpful. Senator Whitsitt.
Thank you. I know you're going to get into to assessments, and I'm not sure how deeply you're going to get into them. There's a couple things that I'm particularly interested in. Looking at, with the IT subcommittee, some of the charges that DAS is sending on to assessments to other agencies, such as DMV, is about $40 million a year to use your mainframe. OHA is even bigger than that.
Yep.
I'd like to know, I mean, in a typical biennium, how much money is running into DAS for that central services for that mainframe or whatever you call it?
Yeah. Madam Chair, Senator Whitsitt, we're going to get into those details in a little bit. We've got probably a mind-numbing amount of detail that we're going to give you in a little bit about the assessments. Okay. So there's a fair amount. If you still have those questions as we get to the end of it.
And the other question has to do with the state service, state government service charges on the small agencies. I believe it was the Board of Accountancy that figures out that in 2019 about $22,000 a employee.
Yeah. Madam Chair, Senator Whitsitt, what we're going to do is we're going to do a high-level overview of the assessments and the fee-for-service charges from DAS's perspective, actually from the agency perspective, and we're going to end with three case studies. We've looked specifically at Board of Accountancy, Tax Practitioners, and Construction Contractors Board so that you can see from their perspective what they're seeing the rates going up. But we'll talk a little bit about that. This is an extremely complicated story. DAS has, as we've been putting the information together, there's many lines of business that DAS is using. There's a mix of assessments and fee for services with that have different methodologies. There's embedded policy choice, and we'll get into all that today.
Thank you.
Okay. Madam Chair, any other questions before I roll forward?
Roll forward, Mr. Martin.
All right. So I'm going to let Alex step back, and I'm going to have Donna step up, who's our budget director for the state for DAS.
And if we really, really quick, yeah. Madam Co-Chair. Before we proceed forward, would it be possible as we do the presentation to make sure we don't use acronyms? Because we have some folks who, it might really help us with that.
Madam Chair.
It's always hard.
Representative Smith, I will do my best, and
okay.
Please catch me if I don't.
Okay,
so
thank you.
There will be acronyms on the sheet, but I will try and explain them as we go through.
Perfect.
That's
thank
great.
You.
Thank you. I think it's okay. Also helpful, even if we start to get to know that people watching or who go back to ask the questions about this don't necessarily know it. So we appreciate that. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair.
Very much. We'll keep that in mind. So let's move to the first slide on here, and there's going to be a series of I think you can just go ahead and use this, Don. There we go. There's some high-level themes I want you to see right off the bat before we get into the details of it. And I think that there has definitely been growth in the DAS budget, and you're going to see that as we go through this. They fall into major thematics that we're going to play through as we walk through all these different scenarios. And those thematics start out with the fact that this is the Department of Administrative Services went through an entrepreneurial management which split aside, you've seen this before in front of this committee, the policy functions of DAS separate from the service side of DAS. So that's the first piece of it, and that happened about 3 years ago. This is the first budget that's been built under that kind of model using this first acronym, Customer Utility Boards, which this group has seen before, which is inside of the four major service areas. There is a group of basically agencies that are receiving the service, a mixture of large agencies, medium-sized agencies, and small agencies. And those agencies sit together once a month with DAS going through service levels and what's happening for service and also building the budget model. So this is the first budget that is working under the recommendations from those customer utility boards. And those groups have basically come up and made recommendations that fall into two major policy choices. The first one is there's a series of policy choices that increases DAS's budget overall. And those you can see here, the first one, which is the next acronym, the Human Resource Information System, which is the state's personnel system, which is two big databases that are old legacy systems that at some point need to move forward to be changed. There's a proposal in this budget to revamp in the 15-17 biennium and issue debt to revamp those two major systems that are out there. That is a big cost increase that will be paid back over years, but that's a policy choice. One of the things that Mr. Siebert's looking at for all of you as we're building the budget. The second major policy choice is increasing.
Mr. Naughton and Mr. Siebert, can you remind me, are we going to have a separate hearing just on the Human Resources Information System, or is that going only to capital construction?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I don't believe there's any specific meeting set up for that project, but we can talk about that after this meeting.
I think I'd like us to consider that because this is a very big lift, and I think there are clearly some significant potential upsides of it for agencies as opposed to the downside of simply increasing assessments. I think it's important for us to be really clear what we're asking to do.
Yeah. And Madam Chair, one of the other things is that as users of that information, both Legislative Fiscal Office and the Chief Financial Office, we can't get the answers that many of you are asking us because this data system is so antiquated, we can't get that information for you. So there's a lot of reason to do this. I think most of the questions have been how to move forward, when to move forward, things like that.
And so really quick, Madam Co-Chair, before we proceed forward, on the Human Resource Information System, what can you remind me, what is the total capital need for that project, anticipated, projected?
My name is Donna Holy Valenzuela, and I'm with the Department of Administrative Services Business Services Unit. The bond that we're asking for is about $20 million.
Okay.
The debt service is estimated to be about $5 million.
Perfect. Thank you very much. And the term on that would be how long?
I believe it's 5 years.
5 years.
But okay. I have to check. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so the second major thing that we're doing inside this budget is that we have recognized that we have some gaps in IT oversight, and you'll see that built into the Chief Information Office budget, and there's a number of staffing requests inside that office to give more oversight, and part of that is asking for additional analysts and the things that we refer to as strategic technology officers to really build the stage gate process, which is an incremental development design system, so that we are getting more frequent updates as what's happening with IT. In order to do that, it takes more staff to do it. That's the second big piece that we're actually looking at.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Naughton. I guess that one of the questions I have is, as agencies are getting ready to do these big projects, This is simply an impression, and I'm asking for your help. I get the impression that they're pinging back and forth between LFO and DAS, and that sometimes the left hand and the right hand maybe don't know what's going on. Mm-hmm. And let me give you an example, and certainly the legislature doesn't. I have been grilling ODOT about their VMT system. And in testimony, everything is fine. I'm told that the QA maybe thinks differently. I am more worried about what that says for ODOT's ability to handle a computer redo in the $100 million than I am about the $8 million that we've wasted so far on the VMT, at least wasted in my view. We're supposed to go live July the 1st, and there are significant risk issues. So I'm projecting this ahead, and what I'm really asking you is if the beefed-up personnel in your information technology area will help harmonize so that there are standard procedures for agencies and the stage gate process is well known and adhered to and lessons are learned from catastrophic prior failures. That's really what I'm looking for. And sure. Madam Co-Chair and Mr. Co-Chair, respectfully, if they asked for 100 people and it solved that problem, sign me up. We have got to fix how poorly we're doing information technology.
Madam Chair, Senator Johnson, we completely agree with you, which is why we're bringing this forward. And Alex, if you want to join me at the table, we can talk about this a little bit, because this is a big deal. Alex, and correct me if I get off filter on this, but as I understand it, the entire purpose of what we're trying to do is these strategic technology officers would work on the front end as we're developing the concepts and figuring out what is it we want to do and is this the right technology in the planning so that we have a much better, stronger planning presence on the front side to make sure we don't get off kilter.
So let me ask a question on that, Madam Co-Chair.
Certainly.
So these oversight officers give – we're going to have deep conversation today.
Yes.
We're in phase two here.
Yeah.
Give us specifics. What will an oversight officer be responsible for? Give me a job description.
Madam Co-Chair, Representative Smith, so there's really only four things we do in IT. We consult, we design, we build, and we run. That's really all we do. The places where we've had difficulties in the state of Oregon have been in the front end with a consultant design, getting the requirements right, as well as structuring what it is we're supposed to be, what the architecture is, what it is we're supposed to be actually building to, some kind of standard so it's interoperable, so it does all those lovely things IT should do magically. And then we've struggled, and as a consequence, we've died in the build. That's where all the money's spent. That's where everybody gets to find out where how poorly we've done in the consultant. The design comes out in the build. That's really what we're hoping to do here with the strategic technology officers piece is assist in the consultant design, capture of requirements, and then defining a structure, and then with the analyst, the build.
So these oversight officers, they will work with the different agencies to determine is an IT project being structured correctly on the front end. They'll be providing that professional expertise or complementing professional expertise that perhaps an agency doesn't have. Is that fair?
Yes, sir. It is fair.
Madam Co-Chair.
Okay. Representative Taylor.
Thank you, Senator Steiner here. Is this for all agencies, even Department of Revenue? And do you have been overseen?
Madam Chair, Representative Taylor, thank you for the question. It will be our design, our hope is there would be one of these for each grouping. So we've, in Oklahoma, we had a similar grouping of agencies by like activity. So we have a human services or people type grouping. Public safety is a grouping. Each one of these groupings has a strategic technology officer that will be involved with all the agencies that are within that family to work with them on coming up with designs and with requirements that are not only comprehensive but complementary to what the other activities and the other agencies are doing. So, for instance, a case management system for one organization in public safety. Well, there should be a case management process overall that component of it would fit into. So through the entire process from the inception of an investigation all the way through to pardon and parole, that these would be complementary processes that are synergistic and not repetitive or redundant. And that would be our hope, is as we're able to gather those requirements and able to understand in context what it is they're trying to, the question or the function they're trying to support, our hope is, our expectation is that will reduce our, not only our struggles with things, but also how much rework and duplication we have.
Co-chair.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair.
And then Representative Collins.
Again, Mike, please know we're at that phase of the analysis where this is where all the big boy questions get asked. So it's not in any way to be pointed. So I want to be real clear on that. So I want to make sure I understand, what's the level of expertise these oversight officers are going to have? What level of experience are they going to be when you hire them?
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, that's one of the things that our LFO analyst and I have had discussions around. Our expectations is it is a very high level of expertise, that these are not people that are people coming out of college. Okay. This is not something that we're looking for. So right now, the proposal reads that they're to be, I'm going to get this wrong, it's the PEMF series of it's that level, that layer of expertise. We're working with Mr. Seifert Siebert and others to come up and others to come up with a different categorization of these folks so that they're not in the PEM series, which I'm not opposed to. We're really looking for a very high level of capability to be able to do this, because this is a very difficult job to do.
And we're relying on these folks to be the eyes and ears for us,
yes,
to report to our LFO expertise to make sure these are going correctly. And I think Senator Johnson hit it on the head. We got to start getting this stuff right.
Yeah.
Okay. Representative Comp and then Senator Johnson. Did you also have a question? And then
Madam Co-Chair, can I make one comment on following
please
on this?
I need to start taking notes about who's
Representative
next.
Smith, just to follow up, we currently have three of these people on loan, and one of them is the Chief Information Officer from Department of Corrections.
Okay.
So we are targeting a very high level of functioning for these people because it's such absolutely important.
Okay, thank you. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question is about, in the past, the Department of Education has been working on a student-wide data system for at least
years.
A dozen years. Most of the money, a lot of the money has come from federal dollars, and, you know, I guess people pay their taxes today, mm-hmm, and it comes out of our pocket regardless. Are we and the education arena going to have the potential opportunity to possibly work with DAS rather than try to recreate our own wheel?
Madam Chair, Representative Kopp, one of the areas that a strategic technology officer will be hired for is education. We have been working, I have been working right now, and some of my folks have been working as much as we can OEIB group to get that going and to help move them forward in the development process. One of the things that I had the opportunity, one of the things that I bring is having been part of the P20 Council in Oklahoma when Dr. Paul Risser, who was actually from Oregon here, had chaired for us, and I was a member of that for 4 years, and so he was very successful in getting our effort off the ground. I brought a lot of material that I've given to some of the folks over at OEIB as a structure, as kind of one possible roadmap to bring this towards fruition. We've done some research with the state of Tennessee, state of Maryland, others who have been successful with different models, different ways of doing it, to try to at least provide a map of how to proceed. But really what is required from our shop is dedicated resource to help them run those things down. And currently, we simply don't have that.
Thank you.
Okay. Senator Johnson and Senator Whitson.
Perfect feed into my question. First of all, I want you to say again the four things that you do, because that's the best shorthand I've heard for it.
Consult.
Uh-huh.
And when I say consult, I mean gathering requirements or where.
Right.
Design, which is actually to figure out, okay, so this is what it ought to look like from a, you know, this is the processes and the people and that kind of thing. Build, that's the actual creation of whatever it is, if it's writing a piece of software or implementing a piece of software, whatever it is. And then run. And that run means, you know, run, optimize, sustain. Mm-hmm. It goes by a lot of different names. So, you know.
Cool.
That's really the four things that we do.
Well, that's a nice shorthand. Now my question.
Yes, ma'am.
In your last comments, you were talking about how deficient we are in some areas and that Oregon has notably stumbled in the build piece because we probably have done poorly in the design piece or the consult. Before this legislative body is a first step on a, I can't pin the number down, but for the sake of argument, let's say $100 million journey to redo DMV's computer. You're sitting here as sort of the most equal among equals in agency land saying we're not prepared to do this. What cautionary tale should I draw from the exchange that you just had with this committee in terms of my committee that is going to be looking at providing this front-end money for DAS? What I think I have heard you say is we're no part of prepared yet to undertake this odyssey. Am I putting words in your mouth?
So, Madam Chair, Senator Johnson, the Department of, I'm sorry, the ODOT, Department of Transportation, has been working. They actually have a STOW. They loaned us a position, and we filled it. Tony Black is their strategic technology officer. He's worked very closely with the Department of Transportation through the stage gate process. So they have moved through, the first I'm sure they're through the first two gates, and I think they're standing on the cusp of the or they're getting towards the third. They're standing on the cusp of the second gate. I'm sorry. So they're at the second gate right now. They're moving towards the third gate, which will be execution. The Legislative Fiscal Office has recommended approval of that. It is a co-process that we developed with the LFO, the stage gate process for how projects go from cradle to grave, and it's really just a discipline that we run.
So, if I can, Senator Johnson, we've actually gotten started on this work already, and so the DMV project is one that's been going through the stage gate process. The package here, we've got three of these people on loan. The package now that's in front of you is to make those permanent positions inside the CIO's office, and also have more analyst types, not just the STOWs, because that's not the whole package, but also the people to be monitoring the build side of this as well, and augment that we have in the system to do both. We've already gotten started on this kind of work.
As long as I get the gavel, I get one more question before I go to Senator Whitsitt. Did the vehicle miles traveled computer build out go through your stage gate process, or is ODOT winging it on that one?
Madam Chair, Senator Johnson, I'm sorry, will you please repeat? I think as fast as I talk, so you'll have to give that one to me again, please,
cool.
Ma'am.
As we teased out in a hearing the other day, we collectively, the legislature authorized and ODOT began executing on a vehicle miles traveled pilot project.
Yes, ma'am.
And it had an initial fiscal of $2 million, give or take.
Yes.
They have now spent $3 million towards $8 million in this biennium and are projecting $7.9 million more next biennium.
Yes.
That's $15 million that's coming out of the highway fund. I'm trying to figure out, did they go through any discipline when they started that undertaking that had any level of scrutiny from you all, or did they just start to run? They've already gotten rid of the manager of the department who needed help, and they brought in extras. And I'm just trying to figure out who's watching the store and at what level does it kick in with a requirement to go through any kind of rigor or analysis in the CIO's office.
So, Madam Chair, Senator Johnson, yes, ma'am. There were several projects. You may remember from my previous presentation, there were 18 projects that were under review that were being overseen by the state CIO office when I came. I asked for a comprehensive listing of all agency projects. I got 81 back. So we went from 18 to 81 in the span of about a week.
Yep.
This was one of those projects that was in flight that before the stage gate had been established. Then we have had to work our way backwards with those pieces, with things. We wouldn't stop something that was in flight and go back to the very beginning. We've taken them as they were. We've identified which elements, which components that we feel are critical for that, and we've helped them to develop those components. Those things are in place right now. They are up to speed with where they ought to be in stage gate. If we were starting this project at the beginning of this biennium, it would have gone through a different process, but I have to take the hand that's dealt to me and make the best of it. So we have brought them up. We're very confident in where they are and feel very secure in where they are in the process, that they've met our requirements and that they are up to speed on stage gate. And again, we work very closely with the LFO analyst on that, and we're comfortable with that.
But Madam Chair, Senator Johnson, as far as the initial costing, that was not something we were part of. So
one more. If there was a QA report that flagged significant risk, would you pull that and give it an increased scrutiny?
Madam Chair, Senator Johnson, of course. We would ask for mitigation efforts, what it was they were going to do to address it, and that would indeed get a higher level of scrutiny from us.
I've asked for the QA on this particular project at ODOT, and hopefully Ms. Naburka is in the process of getting it. I would love to get it to you and make sure that you have seen it. I have not read it, but I am told that there are significant risk factors, and I'm trying to figure out when does it get pulled out of the herd for special attention. Thanks.
Okay, Senator Whitsitt, you've been very patient, and Mr. Pettit and Mr. Naughton, thank you for sticking with us all these questions.
With the stage gate process, I think I like the idea. I think that the timeline needs to be compressed so that it can be done well and done quickly. When speaking with IT from DMV, Department of Motor Vehicles, they're looking at 9 years to get implemented. The computers that I have, they're 9 years old, are pretty worthless. Oregon Health Authority, same sort of thing. I mean, they're looking at I think 8 years or something like that. When you start doing that, then you have to start looking at the cost of staff time for design and build. These people are getting a lot of money, and what are they doing? I don't know, you know. So, I mean, I think that I agree with Senator Johnson. Whatever it takes to put it together so you can do it faster, better, quicker, and get it online while it's still functional. And then the other thing, we think we need to continue to look very closely at the ongoing cost of these projects once they're up and running, because it appears that your central intelligence, CINIC, whatever that stands for, I mean, it sounds like there's somewhere south of $200 million a year to run that thing. Mm-hmm. Maybe a great deal more than that. I'm sure you have those figures. I don't know whether that was considered when the project was built, whether there would be a quarter of $1 billion of ongoing cost in perpetuity.
Madam Chair, Senator Whitsitt, Sarah Johns is laughing because we've had this debate many, many times. I think the initial costing of that project, we all agree, was significantly off. At this point, we're in the process of actually trying to figure out how do we position those services. We started that project well over 10 years ago. The IT world has changed in that time, and so we're undergoing right now a revisioning of what are those services and lines of service into the future. But that will be future conversations we will have with you. Those conversations are starting right now, but we're not yet at the point to figure out where they go. But the cost is significant, and you'll see that in the numbers we'll talk about in a few minutes with assessments.
Thank you.
Okay. Madam Chair, if I can keep rolling now.
Go for it, Mr. Naughton.
On to the third bullet of the big policy choices that are happening. We're still under a series of policy choices to drive up overall costs. That third one is that in this thing that we call the data center, that Enterprise Technology Services, or ETS is the other way you'll hear it called, is the consolidation that happened about 10 plus years ago of all the state's computing power for most of the servers and mainframes and kind of those things. It actually is out by Costco, and there's a big building over there that's got all this stuff in one place.
Madam Chair, we've changed the name again. No. We keep changing the name to hide the protect the guilty.
Madam Chair, Senator Johnson, it's referred to as Enterprise Technology Services. That is the phrase that you've seen it inside, but you will hear people still refer to it as the data center, and certain people have been
CINIC.
That's the phrase that we tip the four-letter word we don't usually say, but that's the other one that's kind of out there.
Okay, I just want to make sure what we're doing.
This third bullet is that when we develop that thing that's out by Costco, we have a bunch of really old infrastructure out there. And during the February 2014 short session, we actually had a package approved to upgrade a bunch of the equipment because we were having significant equipment failures.
I remember this.
That was a conversation that was a significant investment of resources. We ended up, leasing the material, the physical assets. But we also, and this is along something that Senator Whitsitt has talked about for many years, is also trying to set up enough money so when the time comes, we wouldn't be coming asking for you to bond new equipment, but we'd be setting aside. That investment on the front side and then secondary resources for the future is a big hit into agency budgets. And you will see it that as we go through the fee for service charges and specifically an assessment from the from ETS, you're going to see a big jump in cost, and it's related to this. So that's the third of the big adds into the state budget, into the Department of Administrative Services budget. The last one also here is very important as we talk about smaller agencies. Because outside of the growing DAS's budget overall, there were some policy recommendations about how we allocate costs among agencies that you would not normally see in the budget process. This is really about revenue that comes in. But we want to highlight them for you because they are policy choices embedded in this budget that we've been talking with Mr. Siebert about. And you all can certainly make a different decision based on how you want to allocate. But the first one is when we built the what we refer to as the data center, it was built under a model where all of the agency services of the division services we build out as user fees for people. What that was designed to do, like any of us that are purchasing in the private sector, is incentivize people to make wise choices and use less service. That's what price points are all about. What we found, though, is that while people would make decisions to reduce costs, their variable costs, because everything was loaded in there, we got this perverse incentive that was happening that people would drive costs down, but the fixed costs of maintaining that facility and those servers, all it meant when someone drove their usage down was it popped up somewhere else because those fixed costs were still set. So it meant that if you drove down rates and costs in one area, it just ballooned out somewhere else because those fixed costs are stable. So one of the recommendations that came out of the Customer Utility Board on the ETS side was to break those costs for the for ETS into two different chunks. The first one is an assessment for the fixed cost side of things that they recommended what's built into this budget is the same methodology that we use in the Chief Financial Office. They allocated costs based on the size of an agency's budget and the combination of the number of FTE in the agency as a proxy for how much they were using the state system. That can be debated as to whether or not that's the right methodology for spreading costs out. They also put in a minimum cost, like the Chief Financial Office does, that really small agencies of less than 30 people would not see the fluctuations that same way. They would pay a minimum charge of $5,000, and that was how it was set up. But you will see that when we get into the case studies that there's that significant jump in the ETS rate for both of those two issues.
Senator Johnson.
Just when you said it, I mean, I understood the methodology that you had the base rate and then the number of employees and how much time was actually consumed. But I'm thinking about ODOT again and the number that Senator Whitsitt just said. When you think about computing power, guys that are scraping the snow off the Santa Yam are probably not requiring a huge amount of computing power or flaggers or whatever. And so I wonder where you are in your deliberations deciding whether the headcount is really a relevant measure of cost allocation.
So, Madam Chair, Senator Johnson, you can go on either extreme on that one. So Department of Education, Rob Saxton, was quick to point out, I have a really big budget, but our computing usage is not that high because it's the state school fund that goes through their budget.
Yeah.
So that's why they use this blended rate of budget and FTE count as a proxy. That is what they recommended. There are other ways that you can cost those things out. That's the one that was recommended and built into the governor's budget, but we can work with Mr. Siebert on what other options are out there as well. But this is a big policy choice.
Senator Johnson.
Your predecessor sat in that chair and talked about trying to true up these costs that as soon as it came online, that there were some costs that were hidden or not allocated. And I would hope that as you're going through your analysis, that we true this up only once. And maybe that's, you know, I want to be tall, thin, and blonde. We all learn to live with disappointment. But
I'm sure you really did.
But to the degree that this roller coaster, for the small agency managers, this must be like the nightmare version of Groundhog Day to have the fluctuations happen practically every biennium.
Senator Steiner-Hayward, Senator Johnson, that's the purpose of doing a minimum charge. So when you get into the details of the three agencies we're talking about, two of them on the Chief Financial Office, it's a flat $5,000 no matter how much the CFO's budget goes up or down because it's a fixed cost. And for the smaller agencies, that would be the same kind of model they would set up. As you get bigger, then you would start to see the fluctuations, which would be partly driven by your own usage. But this is a big issue. I will be completely transparent with you, though, that we have a fairly complicated finance model inside of enterprise technology services. We've been working with Mr. Siebert about this one. We have to simplify that a little bit. It's very difficult for Donna's team to work through it, and it's difficult for my team, the chief financial officer, to. So that's absolutely one of the things we're looking at.
Mr. Sieber wants to say something, and then I want to say something.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I just wanted to note, too, that what you'll see, the LFO recommendation for ETS will be essentially a temporary budget for the service unit, because they are going through the review. They're going through the internal review. They had another project started, as was on the previous slide, of the common IT service delivery, where they're going through a number of different lines of service and deciding if ETS should be in that business, who should provide those services. So that, until those kinds of things are decided, it's very difficult to establish a budget for the ETS. So it'll be essentially a kind of a temporary budget where the agency will be expected to return in February, during the February session, to come back and to chew that thing up.
Cool. Thank you.
I would just say, add in follow on to what you said, Mr. Naughton, about your agency's budget being complicated. That's an understatement.
Yes.
And it does make me wonder a little bit about thinking about simpler ways to fund the agency, because I think we go through this conversation on a regular basis, and there are a lot of different ways to finance things. It's analogous in some ways to the conversation we have with the governor's office about staff that are on loan to the governor's office from agencies, and should those be in the governor's budget or should those be in the agency's budget? Anyway, Representative Kopp.
Thank you. And I need to add my own comment. What this committee has shown me is the lack of transparency in our agencies, and that has been disturbing. And if I wasn't here, I wouldn't. Well, I just used the education department as an example. Rob Saxton one day sat and testified, and he says, "Well, you'll find that on my web page, on our web page." Mm-hmm. And I said, "Well, I'm going to need a tutorial." And we need to have responsibility to inform our constituents this is a good conversation, and I highly support the direction you're going. So it's not my committee, but I'm here to cheerlead you on.
Thank you. So Madam Chair, for the last one that's on here is also another policy choice, and it is related to, as we've moved into this entrepreneurial management model, one of the concepts behind it was to true up costs where they're actually occurring. And so what you see here, Enterprise Human Resource Services. So this is a shop that does personnel services for other small agencies, and you'll see that in a number of different places. They're not big enough to have their own personnel staff, so they contract with DAS to do it. One of the concepts that rolled through about 3 years ago was to true up costs, because rates for those small agencies were held artificially low. And so what that meant was that the bigger agencies were subsidizing the cost of providing that service, and they were seeing their rates go up. One of the reasons that we will highlight when we get into the examples is that some of the reason that the rates are going up so high on the small agencies is because they're actually picking up the full cost of providing that service for them. And we'll get into that detail in a little bit. But again, that's a policy choice. So moving to the next slide, I know this one's taking us a while, but these are big policy issues. I'm going to spend just a brief comment on what Senator Steiner Hayward said just a little bit ago. We have made this budget complicated over the years, and it was at one point much simpler. Prior to 1991-93, DAS was really two agencies. It was the executive department, which is what you now know as the policy offices, which was a general fund only, primarily, agency. And then there was the Department of General Services that provided what you now see as the services side. So the policy and service split was two separate agencies, and the policy side was general fund. They were merged in 1993, and what came out of that, at the same time we're facing a recession, there was the decision made that we could save general fund by moving the policy offices to an assessment model. The reason for that is, what is 100% general fund, you could now assess equally across all the agencies. And if we move to the next slide real quick, you will see that now 44% of what you see as state government service charges in all the small agencies. If you look at a statewide basis, 44% of that ends up being general fund, and the other 56% is other fund agencies, federal fund agencies, and lottery fund programs paying for this. So this assessment model, going to what Senator Steiner Hayward said and Representative Comp said about the complexity, we did it in order to save money because it allows us under federal law to charge those other revenue sources to get these covered. And it ended up being a general fund savings back in 1991-93. We could simplify it by moving those policy offices back to general fund, but that would cost you the general fund to do it, which is why we never have up to that point.
Representative Taylor.
Thank you, Senator Johnson. So for the shared financial services, when I was doing my homework, shall we say, so there are 22 agencies that you provide the shared financial services for, doing like the accounts payable, things like that, something like that?
Madam Chair, Representative Taylor, I'm not sure the exact number.
Something,
that sounds close.
Something
but,
like that,
yeah.
I'm not sure. And so who decides whether or not an agency can do their own, provide their own financial services versus you doing it for them?
So, Madam Chair, Representative Taylor, that's up to the agency to decide if they want to get those services from Department of Administrative Services, do it themselves, or contract with another agency to provide that service for them. Senator Johnson and I were on the phone this morning about one of the agencies that I'm currently digging into because they had chosen to do it themselves. They've run into some issues, and now my office, the Chief Financial Office, is going in to clean some things up. And we will probably be coming back to the legislature on how to do that. But it is their choice, Representative Taylor.
Follow-up.
Thank you, Senator Johnson. So the reason I bring it up is that I know there are a lot of great employees out there working hard and wanting to do the right thing and all that. I don't think people are intentionally doing something wrong. But I am concerned about when it comes to actual receiving and spending of money, of funds that are general fund dollars, when the shared financial services, where there, it's, I understand there's systems in place, but there's a lot of judgment that's going on.
There is.
And I'm concerned that there aren't enough safeguards in place, to put it politely. And I'm wondering what your thoughts are on that, because that's really what it comes down to, is the money coming in and the money going out, and who's making the decisions and who's authorizing. And I'm just wondering what your thoughts are on that.
So, Madam Chair, Representative Taylor, I agree with you. We have in what we call our Oregon Accounting Manual is the standards for everybody.
Okay.
You're very familiar with that. Yeah. We have then our accounting system, which everyone has to put their transactions, which has embedded in it a number of controls.
Mm-hmm.
But when you get down to this lower level, separation of duties, for example, mm-hmm. they're directed, they're supposed to do it. But if they don't at that local level, it's only when we start to hear that there's a problem. And the Chief Financial Office, we have the authority to go in and look at the books of an agency, which is partly what we're doing right now. And we do that probably once or twice a biennium. We will go into an agency and say, we're not comfortable with what's going on. Let us see what's happening. And then we will sometimes take that over. And we have done that probably once or twice a biennium.
It raises an interesting question, though, Mr. Naughton, whether or not that is your random oversight where you just dip in and kind of spot check how performance is going, or is it complaint driven like the call I made to you?
Yeah. And, Madam Chair, it can be either one. It can be getting a heads up from you. Legislative Fiscal Office has analysts assigned to every agency out there. So does the Chief Financial Office. Part of our folks' responsibility on both of our sides is to have an understanding of what's going on. Now, if an agency is trying to cover something up, it's obviously hard to get a hold of that. And so that comes when we actually get complaints of other things. But sometimes we do. And the one that Senator Johnson is referring to, I was already aware of it. We were already working on it. So it's a risk in the system.
Follow up. So regarding with the Oregon Accounting Manual, the rules can only take you so far.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's limits, but I understand that has to be broad in order to categorize things, and I've seen that. I guess it becomes really hard to be able to detect basically bad decisions or questionable decisions because the categories are very general.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard to see, in my opinion. Maybe mm-hmm. you can tell me otherwise. And again, I'm not saying that people are necessarily stealing money or something like that, but it's about detecting judgment and patterns and then people, it becomes commonplace. Well, we've always paid for this. We always do it this way. This is the accounting code we always use. The manual says I can do it this way. And then we lead down to what I'm learning now to be more problems than I was previously aware of. And so what, I mean, you probably don't think that's all a great idea. So what would you like to do to, what would you do if you were king to fix that? I mean,
Madam Chair, Representative Taylor, and part of this is the risk of the system. And let me take one step back, because it's not all bad. We have a lot of agencies that do a lot of really good work. Mm-hmm. I'm less concerned, for example, we've talked about ODOT. They have a very good financial shop. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of these large agencies do a fantastic job. And the really small agencies, a lot of them contract with DAS or some other agency to do that work for them. And I have confidence in those shops because I know the teams that they're working with. Mm-hmm. The ones I have risk are these kind of in-between stage where they're small enough that they don't have a lot of infrastructure behind it, and but they're big enough that they want to do it themselves. So those are the ones we just watch really closely. And we don't catch all of them, but we catch a fair amount of them. And I haven't had a lot of significant issues. Now, the other side is that under Oregon law, I have a pretty big hammer that I can bring out. Under Oregon law, if an agency overspends its budget, we have the authority to hold the director or the board chair personally liable for the loss. And so there's some significant things that we will bring out on occasion, usually when I need to convince them that they need to work with us and get their stuff straightened up. So we are trying to be very diligent. I will not say it would catch 100%, but I do think we would catch a fair amount before they get completely sideways.
Senator Johnson.
You know, it occurred to me just as this exchange happened that you can hold the board chair and the agency director liable. I knew that from being an agency director, although a little teeny agency.
Yep.
But I wonder if that is adequately explained to the good volunteers that come forward to serve on our myriad of boards and commissions that now totals in the aggregate about 2,400 souls. Not all of them are chairs, but it would certainly be interesting during the vetting period to say not only are you coming in for this level of abuse, but if there's some financial screw up in the agency, get out your personal checkbook.
Yeah. So, Madam Chair, Senator Johnson, we don't typically hammer agencies with that. It usually is brought out when I've got to get their attention significantly. I think in all of my 19 years working in state government, I don't remember us using that authority other than maybe once in a very egregious situation.
And Madam Chair,
Mr. Deno, who looks like he's going to throw up.
Madam Chair, Senator Johnson, I believe that the best practices for boards and commissions, the key performance measurement that was started at your request, includes some information for folks like that are on boards and commissions that they can be liable. I think the whole purpose of that best practices was to make folks aware of some of their responsibilities, because there was a concern in the legislature that it wasn't being done in the executive branch.
Thank you.
And one final comment on this for all of you is that usually by the time I step in, we do try, as much as we're big bad chief financial office, we are there to help them get through it. And so once we engage and once we get through that initial stage, again, there's a reason we don't use this hardly ever, because most people want to get it straightened up and cleaned up. And so we have a pretty good track record getting that moving forward. So,
Mr. Naughton, I have one more question.
Sure.
You know, you talked about smaller agencies contracting with other large agencies separate from DAS. Do we have information that suggests that it really makes sense to have, even with the large agencies, I mean, you said ODOT, for example, is doing a good job. Do we have a sense that it really does make economic and best practices sense to have it spread out at all, or to have the small agencies choose which large agency they want to contract with? Could you talk about that a little bit more, please?
So, Madam Chair, we have been having multiple conversations, especially with the mid-size agencies, about even consolidating at the mid-size level, those sharing services, and you're very well aware of that because we've had those conversations in front of here. There is probably a economy of scale at a certain point that if you are above a certain size, it probably makes sense for you to run the shop yourself and then become a satellite off of which everyone else runs off of. But there, we know that, for example, with some of the technology stuff around mail hubs and how big they can get. I don't think we have a hard and fast rule, and Barry, maybe you know something more than I do. We're continuing to work to find opportunities to merge together and work together and share services, especially among some of these smaller ones where they can move to a larger hub agency. But those are very slow conversations to get to. We have some pilots out there that we're doing on accounts payable and some other things, but it takes a while to get those set up.
Mr. Pack, is there anything you'd want to add? Okay. Senator Whitson, do you have a question? Okay, good. Okay, thank you.
So next slide, slide seven, this is just to highlight that when you look at state government service charges inside of your each individual agency budget, you see that DAS is the major player in this, making up 79% of it, but there's a lot of other ones as well. Everything from Treasury charges to the Secretary of State Audits Division to the Ethics Commission and the rest. We just wanted to highlight that DAS is not the only thing, even though it is absolutely the 800-pound gorilla in that world. So now we're going to start with the next slide, moving to the DAS budget specifically. And all the numbers you're going to see from this point forward are the accumulation of amounts charged to agencies. So this is not DAS's budget per se, but is what is built into the budgets for other agencies on something we call the price list of how much they're going to have to send to DAS. And this, the charts you're going to see will have three things on them. It'll start with the 2013-15 LAB, legislatively approved budget, which is the farthest one on the left. It will then have the 2015-17 agency request budget, and I'll come back to that in a second. And then it will have the 2015-17 governor's budget. Now, the reason we've got all three of those on there is that when you're going through the Ways and Means process, what you are seeing in front of you is the agency request current service level. That is what's been, as we've been working with Legislative Fiscal Office, that was the starting point for conversations. That agency request current service level is where the state government service charge for service is built in for DAS. That's what we call fully loaded. It is all the packages that DAS asked for well over a year ago. That's not what's been recommended to you by the governor. And there's a lot of things that you will never even see in those higher numbers because they didn't even live through the governor's process. So the first thing I want to highlight is that a lot of things you may be seeing in front of your subcommittees with the smaller agencies may be off of this higher number. And LFO, as they go through and make adjustments to the DAS budget, when they get to the end of session bill or wherever LFO decides to make those changes, it may be getting from that higher number down to something else on packages that you wouldn't necessarily even see inside DAS's budget. So the second thing I want to highlight on this is that what you'll see on these lines is the blue section is what we call state government service charges, and we're going to break this out in detail, and the orange is the fee for service side. And these are two different things. State government service charges, generally speaking, are the assessments that are driven by the policy offices primarily, where it's a fixed cost that you're told that you are going to have to pay to DAS. The fee-for-service side, the orange part, is really a user-driven. The amount of services you use will drive the amount of that you actually pay. So that's what the difference is. And what you'll see overall with this first picture is that the overall budget for DAS has gone up by a fair amount. The state government service charges has actually gone down a little bit from the current biennium 2013-15. Now that's...
Mr. Naughton, I'm sorry. I'm having trouble parsing through the slides fast enough, and I haven't read ahead. Are you going to give us some examples of what some of each of those are?
We're going to go to that in the next page. You'll
Excellent.
See
Excellent. Thank you very much.
So, in fact, let's go to that. We're going to focus first on the policy side. This is the policy side of DAS. Chief Human Resource Office, Chief Financial Office, Chief Information Office, and Chief Operating Office. This is all driven by assessments onto agencies. This is the control function of what DAS does. You'll see the 13-15 budget, and then moving all the way to the far right side, which is the 2015-17 budget, there is significant growth. It is driven by two big pieces that are there. One is that technology package, package 105, which is we talked about a few minutes ago. And then the even bigger chunk is that human resource information services system, that debt service. So it's a significant increase on those pieces. Let's flip to the next slide. This is if you break it out by each of the individual divisions. And what you see here, same kind of pattern. 2013-15 is the blue bars. This is how much was charged to agencies, if we look at the far left, by the chief operating office. The gray bar is what's actually in the governor's budget. But when you hear about the agency request current service level, it's going to be choosing that orange bar that's in the middle, which is not ultimately what was recommended to you. To highlight what's happening in each of these areas.
So can I take a step back for just a second? What you all request, what DAS requests in its agency request budget, is ultimately reflected in the agency request budgets of all the other agencies mm-hmm. that
yes.
are affected, right? Mm-hmm. So then when the governor's recommended budget, let's leave the co-chair's budget out
Correct.
For the moment,
yep.
so we're just talking about the GRB. When the governor's budget comes out with much lower numbers, mm-hmm. Then all the other agency budgets get adjusted accordingly.
That's correct.
And if we make further adjustments when we're working on your budget, then that cascades down
yes.
into all the other agencies as well.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Just want to be crystal clear because I don't think this is super obvious to everybody.
The one caveat, and Mr. Siebert, correct me if I'm wrong, my understanding is the way that Legislative Fiscal Office wanted to work this time with the budget, they're starting with the agency request current service level and working down from that point. That's my understanding of what they're working on.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, that's correct. Legislative Fiscal Office in the Oregon budget system, we've had as our base, we've asked this biennium to start with the ARB, which is the agency request budget, current service level. Number of reasons for that, one of which is that the two executive branch and legislative branch side usually decide, agree on current service level. There were some significant disagreements on what current service level should be for this biennium, and so we've decided that we would go ahead and start with ARB current service level, not the governor's recommended budget.
This sounds analogous to what we've been dealing in the education world with the estimates of what we're going to get for property taxes.
Madam Chair, the reason that we had difference between legislative fiscal office and office was actually the current service level for K-12. So that was where we were different. So
fabulous.
To
okay.
highlight where the
perfect
difference
analogy.
Primarily was. So what you'll see here, the chief operating office, and I'm going to talk primarily between the blue and the gray, so I'm not going to spend a lot of time on the orange just because you're going to work down from that point, but what has been recommended to you, what you see as policy packages, is really the gray. So inside of the chief operating office, there really is not a lot of packages there. The only thing that they're asking really to do is continue the limited duration positions related to the project managers. We've been doing a lot of good work to get improve the way that government operates, and it's a continuation of those limited duration positions. Inside of the chief financial office, there's actually a couple things going on. The rate, and I should have mentioned this earlier, there's another theme that I didn't highlight earlier. And that is that when you're building a budget for an agency, you start off with the spending level that's been recommended to you. Then you look at how much revenue the agency is bringing forward from the prior biennium. We don't, in Oregon, we typically do not assess agencies the full amount if we can offset it by money, the resources that the agency already has on hand. And that's one of the things that Mr. Siebert does as he's developing the rates for all of the agencies after he gets done with the DAS budget. Inside of Chief Financial Office and Enterprise Goods and Services, there was a larger beginning balance that is built into here that was artificially able to keep the rate down for the current 13-15 biennium. If you offset that, the Chief Financial Office had closer to $13 million would have been the assessment without that those resources. There was also an error in the agency request budget for the Chief Financial Office. We got a $6 million math error, and so it was overcharged the agency request for agencies. Really, inside the Chief Financial Office, there's only a couple packages related to a couple people and workload issues. And then finally, we're asking to continue, which we'll, I think, have conversations probably on Monday, related to some long-range facility plan, some good work. We want to continue those assessments in the future. We'll talk about that later. Chief Information Officer, the big jump here is the increase of staff that we talked about related to stage gate analysts and also the strategic technology officers. And CHRO, the big jump between the blue and the gray is related to the human resource information system that replacing the personnel system. It's very significant.
And I apologize because I had to step out of the room mm-hmm. on multiple occasions to try to go testify. And I think I came back in when Mr. Pettit was explaining the increase in the CIO's office is to bring on board people who have specific areas of expertise or responsibility for specific agencies that are planning to do specific significant projects that are going to require attention, and then you're going to have some other folks who are sort of utility infielders, depending on smaller agencies, doing smaller projects. Am I correct in that?
You are correct, Madam Chair, but also adding analysts to, as we're building projects and the process of building them, are also monitoring through the stage gate process.
Okay.
You have that correct.
Thank you. Senator Woodson.
Thank you, Mr. Naughton. You do have my attention. The COO is up 27%, the CFO is up 34%, the CIO is up 100%, and the HRO is up 120%, roughly. So hopefully we're going to hear what you're going to do different and much better, and what our return on investment will be.
So, Madam Chair, Senator Widget, you're absolutely right, and those are the policy choices that are going to be in front of this committee for the next several months as you're making decisions. I just highlighted through the ones that are there already. But each one of those are going to be policy packages for things that you can make explicit decisions on. And we've been working with Mr. Siebert on how we can cut some of those back down.
And Chair.
Certainly.
I'm a lot more concerned about the return on investment of this than I am on the actual cost in the overall state budget. That's a very small amount of money.
Yeah.
But we watched the Department of Administrative Services rearrange itself for the last 10 years that I've been here, and I'm sure for the 10 years before that. So,
So Madam Chair, Senator Whitsett, we're going to bring Alice Revelle up, and you probably on Monday would be my guess. And you approved a $2 million package to do some assessments on state facilities. And I will tell you, in my tenure here, we have not done a good job of managing our physical assets, those research. The work that Alice is going to show you is going to show you the output of some of that, which I think is going to help us make some much better decisions in the future about how we use our physical assets. Now, can you get it down to a dollars and cents ROI? We actually potentially could when we actually get down the road with some of this information. You'll see that when we actually have Alice come forward. And it's some really good work to get to that, making wise decisions with our resources so we're not just throwing good money after bad.
And if I follow up one more, If you don't have the figures to show us actual return on investment, I would hope that you would be able to set a goal that we might expect you to reach as a result of those investments.
Madam Chair, Senator Whitsett, that is absolutely what we're trying to get to. And part of what we're trying to do, especially with the long-term facility plan, is to get down to some standardized measurements about what does it cost to operate our buildings per square foot, per FTE, some of those other standards that, quite frankly, we've never had the ability to make comparisons, and then we can actually set goals around them. Some of it, what we're trying to do is get some baseline data, which we don't currently have, but that's what we're trying to get to.
Okay. And so I just want to clarify with, frankly, both of you. Senator Whitsett, when you say ROI, do you mean, in this case, it strikes me that we'd really be talking about saving money rather than getting more money in this case? In revenue, for example, when we're doing stuff, then we have the potential to get more revenue in. That's a different kind of ROI than here, or are you talking about both?
I'm talking about savings money. I mean,
savings money,
a penny saved is a penny earned, an old adage, but I mean, certainly if we invest a great deal of money in learned staff and better equipment, we should be able to run the system with less labor. And less labor should pay for the system.
Understood.
So, Madam Chair, members of the committee, I will push back a little bit on that. One of the things that we see, we've spent a fair amount of effort over the last 2 years aggressively renegotiating leases, for example. A lot of times what we end up seeing is costs avoided as opposed to hard savings. And I think that's something you need to keep in your brain. We have more employees coming in. We have more places that we're trying to get services to. But if you look at the IT world, for example, the appetite for increased IT using is constantly going up on a hyper, I'm getting my words wrong. Absolutely.
Exponential. The word
is the word I'm looking for. If we can slow that rate of growth down, that's a success from where we would have been if we hadn't started this. Those kind of calculations you can do an ROI on, but we don't have the underlying data yet. And that's what I think one of the hard things.
Maybe a little more specific in the Department of Motor Vehicles. In the IT committee, they showed us a little film that was delayed photography so that it, and it speeded up. Of all of the hands-on labor they have to use currently to use the cobalt system, they put little trays in, they go in, they put little trays out, and, this sort of thing.
Yeah.
if you can do all that by programming and pushing a button, mm-hmm. then all the people that do this sort of thing become superfluous, or they should. In a private sector, they do. Mm-hmm. So that's my point.
Yeah. Madam Chair, Senator Witz, I completely understand what you're saying, and I would agree with that. Why exactly?
So then, Mr. Naughton, I would request that as you think going forward about this ROI question broadly construed, that as you start to gather those data, that you think in ways, in multiple versions of what that term really means.
Sure.
Costs avoided, you know, if you think about, we've been doing a lot of this in the healthcare world, right? We're trying to slow the rate of inflation. We're not stopping inflation in medical costs. We're not even getting it down to the CPI. Mm-hmm. We're just getting it down from 15% to ultimately, hopefully, 7 or 8%, yes. which would be lovely. And over time, those savings compound. And so that's an important way to think about, you know, this is where we would be if we weren't doing it, and this is what our costs look like if we are doing it. And then there's real savings in a given time. And, you know, so I think we need to think about all sorts of things.
And Madam Chair, that's the reason I pushed back a little bit, because we've been very involved in the costing of future healthcare savings, and that's exactly this kind of thing that we'll be moving forward.
Great.
So I'm going to roll to the next slide. We're going to move to the service side of DAS, and you'll see pattern similar on the other one that you saw on the policy side, 13-15. If you look at 13-15 to 15-17, there has been pretty significant growth inside of the service side as well. You're going to see the breakout of this when we get to the individual areas. The real growth inside of the service side has been in the enterprise technology services. We'll have a slide that gets to that in just a second. If you look at it overall, though, notice that the blue part on the service side, which is the state government service charges, has actually gone down a little bit. This is masking two separate issues. I'm actually a little bit glad that Senator Johnson has stepped out of the room for the moment. Because when the data center was initially stood up, it involved, and we have this phrase of scenic, there were originally 12, I think now 11 agencies that were involved in that. Those 11 agencies, all their computing power was basically transferred into this thing that we now call the data center. And up until this biennium, all of their costs for those 11 agencies was built into the state government service charges line. Mm-hmm. Every other agency, all other 80 of them, built their costs into a line we call data processing, which is really where they're purchasing that service. In this budget, they've actually sent out those costs for those 11 agencies. It's no longer in the blue part of this box. It's now in the orange part. So it's actually under that separate line item. I only mention that because that's the reason this number has actually gone down. At the same time, there's been an increase in enterprise technology services because of this new assessment that we talked about earlier on how the data center charges have been costed out. If you look at the next slide, this is where you really, I think, will see the difference. This is by the service elements, the service divisions. Enterprise technology services, the assessment piece is over on the left. And you see overall that the gray line dropped overall. So that's the data center. And again, this is the combination of those two assessment changes we just talked about. But notice under the fee for service side, the gray line is significantly higher than what was being built in 13-15. Now, as a reminder, what's driving that is this replacement of this aging equipment out at the data center and other policy packages that support other activities. This is where we get into Mr. Siebert saying that we want to get back to a holding place budget for the data center for this legislative session and come back in 2016. If you look at the rest of the lines, enterprise asset management, which is the facility maintenance and things like that, their costs have actually gone down a little bit on the service side. Enterprise goods and services, which is maintaining everything from surplus property and other areas, I think it's surplus property, and other things that we've got going on, has actually increased a little bit. Enterprise goods and services, fee for service has also gone up a little bit. And then enterprise human resources is here, just we're going to come back to it. On a percentage basis, you're going to see that pretty significant. And we're going to now roll through a couple of these slides because I don't think they add much value here. Skip this one.
All right, Senator Witsit.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Nottman. Would you go back one slide, please? Would you go back one slide?
Oh, sorry.
Thank you. On the right column there is what you're the governor is asking for. Do I look at that right? That's for the pretty much for the mainframe computing. It's about $580 million.
That's all of the service size center. It's everything that is.
It's all DAS services.
It's all of DAS services. They're charged on the fee for service side. So it's when you've had the budget presentations that it's the policy side and the service side of the house. It's the entire service side. Now I should mention while we're on it, when you saw the policy slide that was analogous to this, the scale was tens of millions of dollars. Mm-hmm. The scale on this one is hundreds of millions of dollars. So the service side of DAS is probably 10 times the size of what the policy shop is, just for reference. Mm-hmm. There's a big scale difference there.
If I could make one more request, if we could, the committee could have three or four biennium back, the same figures would be very useful for us. Thank you.
So, Madam Chair, Senator Witsit, it will be hard to get the historical data. We'll give it our best shot because of the splitting of DAS in the last budget cycle, and you understand this. One of the problems is that you lose a lot of that history. So we will do our best estimate out of it.
I appreciate that, Mr. Naughton, but in 1993, we took it apart, and we put it back together. Now we're taking it back apart, and the costs seem to go, each time that happens, there seems to be a major increase in cost. So it'd be very useful to see what's happening.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, we're going to skip through a couple of these slides. Let's advance through this one because these are just regurgitation of the same thing you saw earlier. We're going to move one more. This is slide 16 in your deck. If you want to help orient, the numbers are right at the bottom. This is Enterprise Human Resources. This is the small agencies that are purchasing personnel services from DAS. What we wanted to highlight here, remember at the beginning of this, I told you one of the thematics was that we were in essence subsidizing small agencies. In 13-15, this current biennium, those Enterprise Human Resource Services, we assessed agencies about $3.4 million, which is the blue part over there. When you look at how much was actually costing to provide those services, there was about a 40% subsidy, which is the part that's in yellow. So when we look at the budget for 15-17, even though there's a very dramatic percentage increase, the issue is that it is reversing and getting to a full costing for those small agencies. And again, this is a policy choice. Following up what Representative Taylor said earlier, if you make the cost too high, agencies will try to do it themselves, and then they could potentially run into problems. Part of what was the model behind entrepreneurial management was to get to a true costing kind of model. But we will see this in the case studies that there's some significant increases in some of these small agencies related to this.
So let me just circle back to something that was on one of your very early slides, and maybe Senator Witsit is going to have the same question. But my understanding is that the decision to do it this way came from the customer utility boards, right? And could you talk a little bit about the relative representation of small agencies and large agencies and mid-sized agencies and how those potential policy changes were decided or circulated to agency heads before they were finalized?
So, Madam Chair, that's a very good question. And when the Cubs were designed, they were supposed to be a mix of large agencies, small agencies, and mid-sized agencies. I have been visiting since I've been in this acting role. Three of the four Cubs have already hit. And one of the things I sat down today was the Enterprise Goods and Services Cub. And Ron Burson, who's in charge of the Ethics Commission, has an eight-person agency, is on the board, the Customer Utility Board. And one of the things he highlighted for me to share with all of you is that he's always been on the outside. He's only been on the Cub now for 2 months, I believe. But this kind of transparency for them as a small agency is one of the things he was actually very pleased with. And so it is supposed to be a mix of small, medium, and large. And I believe, especially when this one came up, there were a number of the small agencies, even the ones that weren't on the board, came to this meeting because they wanted to see what was happening with the rate. So it's designed to be a full mix of all of them. But I will tell you in practice, it's hard to keep some of the small agency directors in the meetings because they've got so much other stuff going on. These groups do meet once a month, and so it's a fair time commitment on their side. And Donna, you sit in those if you have any other comments on that side.
Donna.
So, Madam Chair, members of the committee, when we did this rate, the
Enterprise Human Resource Services CUB has about 13 members. By the time we were done with the rate, there were about 30 people helping us with this rate, and most of them were representative of the small agencies okay. that come through DAS for their services.
Okay. So there shouldn't have been, I mean, it was a big increase for someone, but it wasn't a surprise. Nobody should have been surprised by this. If they were surprised, they weren't paying attention. No offense meant to any small agency head out there. But it sounds like there was really significant communication mm-hmm. to people. So yes. they knew this big change was coming.
Madam Chair, that's my understanding.
Okay.
I don't think they were necessarily happy about it. But that's I think the making it clear was...
Right. I mean, I get that. And I that's not the question I asked. but being unhappy about a policy that you were involved in crafting and were given an opportunity to offer input on and that was done in a transparent way is different than being unhappy where it's clear as mud.
Yeah.
And there are two different, I mean, I think any of us can attest to that about almost anything in our lives. So I just want to be clear. Senator Whitson, do you have an additional question?
Yeah, a couple of comments. One sure. is small businesses and small agencies probably have a lot of the same problems. They don't have the staff to put somebody out there to look out for their interests so their interests don't get looked out for. Mm-hmm. In earlier hearings, we've heard that not only is this increase projected for this biennium, coming biennium, but there's another significant projection for the next 17-19 biennium.
Madam Chair, Senator DeWitt, not that I'm aware of, we have not gone into the 17-19 rate development yet.
It's interesting. We've had two different agencies mention that. And also, we've heard that some small agencies are buying their government service charges from other agencies for significantly less. So is their product worth significantly less, or are they doing it for less, or can you speak to that?
So, Madam Chair, Senator Whitson, I don't know which specific agencies. I mean, all of them are going to look at whether or not they can cover the cost, and the inside of those conversations are what capacity they have available to them. We have been having a fair amount of conversation about minimum standards, and I think that's one of the things that was raised to me and from the Customer Utility Board, especially in the enterprise goods and services side, is to make sure that everyone's playing at the same level, because you don't want to have a lower rate purely based on you're providing a lower level of service. So unless we have, you can see what is that level of service you're agreeing to, it's hard to say if it's an apples to oranges kind of comparison. Some of it with the other agencies will depend on the capacity they think they have available. DAS has moved under Customer Utility Board model to a full costing model so that the agencies are charged the true cost of what it would cost to do that. If another agency is subsidizing that for some reason, and for example, aviation, I believe, gets a lot of its services from ODOT, I just don't know if there's that subsidy happening. This budget specifically gets rid of those subsidies that are occurring, which may be why the cost is increasing.
I think it would be possible to get a table or whatever of the smaller agencies that are purchasing their service government charges from other agencies?
Madam Chair, Senator Whitson, we could try. It would probably entail asking agencies. I don't know if anyone's keeping track of that. In fact, that's one of the issues that we were talking with the co-chairs of this subcommittee, is some kind of a potential direction that the Department of Administrative Services should at a minimum be tracking who's getting services from where.
Yeah.
And if I just to follow up, it's entirely possible that an agency the size of Intel can afford to buy services, more complete services, than a agencies the size of the Department of Aviation or a Board of Accountancy can. And so sometimes it's if you can't afford it, it's better to have a lesser service than no service at all if you can't afford the bigger service.
So, Madam Chair, Senator Whitson, I'll again push back a little bit on that. For example, one of the things we found in the IT world is agencies wanting to cut back on IT services, and part of this becomes a security issue. There is a Mr. Pettit, one of the things we're having conversation about with a House bill is giving Mr. Pettit more authority to set those standards and make sure the agencies are complying with it. So if an agency is trying to cut costs because they can't afford it and drop to a level of security that we're not comfortable with, we need to be able to step in and do that. Same thing on the Oregon Accounting Manual. We step in if someone's doing something crosswise and try and get it rectified. So I hear absolutely what you're saying, but we have to be able to enforce some of those minimum standards so we don't have fraud and other things occurring. So.
You also must set minimum standards where the agency can afford them. So, but okay.
Fair enough.
So, Mr. Naughton, to some extent, this gets back to the question I was asking you earlier about how do you decide what's the most cost-effective way to provide services. And for many of these things, at some point, there's a fixed cost that DAS can't go below, mm-hmm. right? And so if you have fewer agencies using the services, then that fixed cost gets distributed among fewer agencies, and to do true cost accounting and pay the true cost of the service, they're going to pay more, mm-hmm. right, on a unit basis. And that's one of the reasons, as we've been having this conversation, that we are very interested in starting to really understand the landscape of which agencies are getting all their services, which are getting some, and which are which ones are being outsourced into which other providers, and what those costs are, because I think until we have a clear handle on it, we're not going to understand what the drivers are. It becomes something of a vicious cycle otherwise, and that's a problem. Mm-hmm. So I think we will have more conversations about that, and there may well be a budget note in your future about this issue, but it's not a surprise. We've been talking about this.
Sure.
You know what? Unless you have something specific to add.
Madam Chair, I was going to say we're at a stopping point now. We've got three case studies that we can bring back on Monday. We've got tax practitioners, accountancy, and construction contractors board. We can start off with that on Monday and then move to Alice's work on the long-range facility plan. And I think you'll see with these case studies, a lot of the things we've talked about up to this point are going to play out in those case studies. It's the same increases on ETS assessments, user fees, and other things are going to kind of roll through.
Okay. To be clear to the committee, thank you. I think we will stop here. I'm going to close for the moment the public hearing on 5502. Tomorrow, I'm trying to figure out what we're doing.
Work session.
Work sessions, right. Board of Accountancy work sessions, so we will need a quorum tomorrow, and we'll get those done hopefully relatively expeditiously, and then we'll look forward to seeing Mr. Knott and his crowd back on Monday to talk more about some case studies. Senator Whitsitt, did you have anything you wanted to add?
If I recall correctly, the Board of Accountancy actually had a spreadsheet showing the increase of service charges from 13-15 to 15-17 to 17-19.
We'll take a look at that, Senator, and if that's true, then we'll talk with not only them but Mr. Naughton and his team about it as well before tomorrow. Thank you.
Sounds good.
Maybe Mr. Naughton, maybe you can hang tight for a minute afterwards.
Sure.
Okay, we're adjourned. Thank you. Mr. Naughton, maybe you can hang tight for a minute afterwards.
Sure.
Okay, we're adjourned. Thank you.
Maybe